Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life.
Hey, everybody, happy Earth Day. We're very excited, you know, here on our Big Blend Radio shows. I know this podcast is going out to multiple networks because, hey, it's Earth Day. So we're celebrating that on our Big Daily Blend show that celebrates all holidays because every day is a holiday, right? And our Nature Connection show, we air that typically every fourth Friday. But when we have Earth Day, well, you know, this podcast needs to go there. And also our Toast to the Arts show. So this is all because we're going to be talking about a children's series, a novel series. It's for middle-aged children, our kids, youth, I should say. And we have Aaron Arsenault joining us to talk about his first book in the series. It's called The Climate Diaries, Book One, The Academy. And we're going to go on an eco-adventure. So welcome to the show, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning. Nice to see you.
Hey, good to see you too. So this is the first book and today is the day. I mean, we're recording this before Earth Day, so we got to be honest because someone will say something, but it's the day. So we can light a candle.
In future tense, it is the day and what a day it is.
I know. Now, do you eat cake? Like, will you celebrate with cake?
I think there will be some cake. Yeah, I think there should be some cake. It's 5 years to get it to market, so I think that deserves a little cake.
5 years?
From the time of inception to the time hopefully it hits a bookshelf or two. Yeah.
Now I know that your background is in the tech world, so you understand that geeky side of things, which I think could actually help us mitigate climate change in a lot of ways, right? So did that inspire you to write this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the geeky side of it, 15 years in the climate tech space, really, I'd like to characterize myself as sort of a professional storyteller because, you know, prior to that, I was working in other tech environments. But when I got into clean tech, I realized there was an element of storytelling that really surrounded, you know, getting people excited about the products I was selling. We weren't just selling, you know, EV chargers or batteries to store power. We were really selling a movement. And so I spent close to 15 years working with some large corporate groups on some pretty big energy initiatives across North America. And, you know, I guess during that time, I was able to like hone my message, so to speak.
Okay.
And then kids came along as they do. And so, it's at some point I found myself looking for things I could read to my kids when they came of age related to climate change, related to the solutions that were, you know, out there. And I wasn't able to find much. And so I said, write something better.
Yeah. I think you're really right about the storytelling because unfortunately, the whole issue with climate change is the arguments that go with it, arguments against science. And then it becomes into a political drama where we really, no matter what, who, what, and where, and how, something has to be done. So we need to actually just stop arguing and get on with it.
It's really unfortunate that it's become so politicized. You know, I think at the end of the day, we can agree on some pretty core fundamental things. I mean, natural disasters hurt people. I don't think anybody likes that. I think we can agree that regardless of whether or not we agree on certain aspects of the science, what we cannot deny is that things are changing around here in our lifetime, and it's becoming it's almost impossible to ignore. And so I think if we rally around some basic truisms with this, like nobody wants disasters, nobody wants to run out of stuff because we all like stuff. And we want to find more sustainable ways to make that stuff so that we can keep making more of it.
Well, the reality, you know, is like, I think tech is going to help save things, you know, come up with these solutions. And so it's hard when we go from, okay, fossil fuels and coal to, okay, we're going to do offshore wind energy. We're going to do, okay, we're solar, right? And even those have to be done correctly. Otherwise, they're detrimental to the environment too. I know huge, massive solar farms we've done shows on it where we're pro solar, but
yeah,
it's almost like we need to have a diverse portfolio of what we do. So it's not this like crop culture that we have in food, you know, because that
Yeah.
destroys the land.
Absolutely. Well, for sure it does. I mean, that's a whole, yeah, we could do a whole show on that. I mean, I think, with regards to the technology side, absolutely. I mean, there are dirty little secrets on the tech side when you talk about how we get the lithium for the batteries,
Yes.
the component. But I will say that, I believe that the recycling aspect within the industry is getting much, much better.
Oh, good.
I think the industry wants to ultimately achieve a closed loop system where we're able to recapture the majority of the components for reuse. I'm not an expert in that area, but I would say that, certainly people a lot smarter than me are trying to figure out ways on how to do that. And I think that's really integral to the discussion because, there is only so much lithium that we can mine. And there's, I mean, really, when it comes to any natural resource, that holds true, right? So whether we're talking about agriculture, whether we're talking about soil erosion and protecting our soil, which is super important, I mean, probably perhaps nothing more important really than preserving our soil so that we can eat, and obviously preserving the natural materials that go into some of this technology and finding ways to recycle it. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like the storytelling aspect because, I was teasing you a little bit about the geeky side, but to me, I mean that in a very positive, warm way, because to me, it makes it more fun. When you hear tech and science, for a lot of us, adult and for youth, we're going, oh, hell no. It's the same thing as talking about, history. Oh, no, we need storytelling to
It's
bridge
like,
that gap, to make it like, it's Mary Poppins. Come on. I'm not calling you Mary Poppins if you want to be. I can give you an umbrella,
Mary
but
Poppins with a Climatex spin, sure. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have, the nerdy stuff and people, yeah, I mean, no, nobody's gonna necessarily sign up for the nerdy stuff, particularly kids. And so I really considered that when I created the arc for the book, for the series for that matter, because there will be more books, hopefully. And in creating the characters, I think what I set out to do was really a couple of key things was teach kids some of the key aspects of what climate change is and what's being done to mitigate it.
That's
And then,
important because there's fear. There's fear.
oh,
So
there's
I
a lot
just
of
wanted to,
fear.
yes.
Climate anxiety at 5 years ago was an obscure term, and now it's a very real phenomenon. I mean, there's lots of factoids out there. I mean, one I came across the other day was 37% of kids by the time they reach teenage years have anxiety symptoms tied to climate fear. I mean, it's a real thing. It is. And so, I mean, that's really the genesis of what set me out on the path to write the book. But in order to make the book approachable, I didn't want it to be a nonfiction sciencey book. I wanted it to be fun. I wanted it to relate to sort of the books that I enjoyed when I was a kid, and to try and inject some humor and some absurdity. You'll notice the book has illustrations, which is rare for a novel. It's not a graphic novel, it's a novel. It's a 300 page novel. But I found a very talented illustrator who helped bring the vision to life with the
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, it's weaving those bits in with the climate discussion and then with a little bit of the tech, and some of the science so that kids are armed with, they're armed with some basic knowledge and they're armed with curiosity so that instead of being afraid of something that they don't understand, it's hopefully going to foster some more empowering belief systems with kids. At least that's my hope. That's my hope with the.
Well, I think number one, having illustrations makes it warm and cozy too, right? And it spurs in the type of in it spurs like a movie in your head. It gets that visualization going, and especially for that age group, right? But tell us a little bit about the characters because they're going on an adventure, and I think, when you think of adventure, stuff happens, obstacles come up, and that's part of the whole thing, just like climate change is this giant obstacle, but it creates opportunities, like we were saying, for new kind of innovative business, innovative products. It's innovative, and that's what I think for youth is to be excited about. By the time like your kids are grown and raised, right? There's going to be careers we didn't even know existed. And that's what's really cool about today's age. Instead of wang, wang, wang about it, we should be like, dude, I wonder what's next. Why not?
I mean, AI is really changing that landscape as
Cool.
well. I mean, but you're right. I've got two kids. I've got a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old, and they are growing up in a very different world than I did. I mean, I'm proud to say I was the last pre-internet generation. You know, I grew up like a regular kid. I didn't own a cell phone until I was 26. I didn't really discover the internet until I was almost finished college. I mean, it was just, and now kids today are, you know, I mean, they are just over-informed, frankly, to the point where they can be, it's too much. I think it's too much too young. And I think what I really set out to do with this series is to reconnect kids to nature through the character. And so in the first book, we've got some nice sort of dashes of nature that are thrown in wherever possible within this sort of closed biodome environment that they live in. I've got lots of ideas for nature and how it's going to integrate into future books. But, you know, at the end of the day, each kid, you know, has particularly two of them have a very strong connection with nature. There's a female character, Kylie, in the book. She was raised, you know, by homeschooled by her parents, and she grew up in far north Queensland. You know, I actually spent some time there after I graduated college, and so a lot of the characters in the setting there are familiar. And so, you know, she likes bush tucker, and she's, you know, she's just super into, you know, the whole health and wellness.
Whoa! What's bush tucker? Tell everybody what that is, because now you're up north here, you know. So for all of us down south, what's a bush tucker?
Well, so that's actually an Australian term, bush tucker. Yeah. It's, you know, eating off the land. Whatever.
Yeah,
the land,
okay.
Everything from insects to the flora fauna that you get in the wild. And so, you know, and
that's
I...
That's what we used to call it in South Africa. I grew up in South Africa. So tuck is like, you'd have like pot courses, like road trip food. So it's Afrikaans, but tuck. And I think it's British, really. It's British, so that's why it's an... So you're talking about Queensland, Australia area. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I spent some time up there, and we went on, you know, the sort of Aboriginal... there was tours with first Australians, and yeah, cool. And so most of all that, yep.
Oh, wow. So did you go on a walkabout?
Well, we did, in a manner of speaking. I suppose a tourist version, you know, of a walkabout, yep.
Yep, all right, you got your boomerang and all that good stuff. Yeah. That's cool that you went there, though, because they really went through a lot just with the ozone layer in Australia. So they had to make a lot of changes. They were really affected. I mean, when I was growing up, it was like, don't go to Australia, you'll get cancer.
No kidding.
Because of the sun. Yeah, that's what we all knew. And then a friend of mine, a good friend, she just went back home to South Africa. And she's like, Lisa, you're never going to believe how hot it is. I'm like, well, it's Africa, you know. She's like, no, it's worse than when we were kids, or we just didn't care as kids. So I don't know. Well, it seems it is getting hotter, you know?
Wildfires. I mean, again, back to...
Oh, you got them big time recent.
I mean, Australia had their turn a few years back, and last summer it was Canada's turn. I mean, here we are, you know, recording this a little before Earth Day, and fire season has already begun in Western Canada. We've got wildfires burning in March in Western Canada. I mean,
whoa, that's weird.
It's weird. You know, it's weird. I mean, this has been a very unusual winter. I'm from the Toronto area, and, you know, one day we have negative temperatures, the next it's practically shorts weather. And I think that's a bit of a misnomer. I think, you know, the term global warming was thrown around early on as people discussed what was happening. And it's like, well, what are we talking about? It's not getting any warmer. It's not perceptible. But I think really what we're learning is that climate change is not necessarily... Like, obviously, there's a warming trend globally, but what it's resulting in is it's erratic weather, things that are happening that don't normally happen. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I was taking my dog for a walk a few weeks ago, and we live right near the shores of Lake Ontario here. And it was a mild day, and there were robins back in the tree. And normally they're gone come November, and they're not back usually until April or May. They're back 2 months early. You know, and migratory patterns are being messed with now because animals don't know what season it is.
Yeah, we're finding that. I mean, that's what we do as we travel the country, the parks, public lands. We're finding some of the most important wetlands for birds migration. You go there and they're dust bowls, no joke. And we're sitting there going, we're in like the top 10 in the country and even North America. And we're like, where are they landing? There's no birds. What happened, you know? And so it's our practices, right? And it's not just drought, but the drought is interesting. We were in the North Pacific Northwest during the winter, and we went through all these ice storms, snow blizzards. I mean, I don't even know why we're alive because we're on the road, and we're stupid at times. It's like, oh, let's go, let's beat the storm. Oh, we better really go, but you can't go too fast because you're going to slide, So it's wild. And at the same time, areas that we cover, like Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks, Giant Sequoia National Forest, those giant sequoia trees, that's the only place you're going to see them is in the Sierra Nevada mountains, right? And they used to be prolific around the globe. I mean, but that's way, way ancient times. I've seen them petrified in Colorado, but that was again ancient times, right? I mean, the fires burn so hot, and these sequoia trees usually need a fire to help actually open up the seed pods so that they can grow and have their little babies. And you wouldn't believe these teeny little babies grow to these massive, monoliths. It's insane what they're giant, but they burn so fast, and the fires are not burning like a regular wildfire that is part of nature's normal cycle that is actually good for the earth. But it's insane the damage of what, and then people's homes too. You want to live close to nature, maybe not anymore. Maybe we do have to live in the little boxes on the hillside,
Well, yeah, and I think that's a good point. Is that, again, and then it's like usually the first thing that happens is it's like, well, it's caused by climate change. Well, no, it's not. Well, yes, it is. Well, no, it's like, okay, let's just forget about that point for a second. Yeah,
And move
wildfires
forward.
are not fun, right? I mean,
No.
we can agree on that. And so we can agree that they're happening more often. Whether or not we agree on the genesis aspect of it, I think at this point is almost irrelevant, which kind of brings me to a pretty core theme in the book. There's an adult character that kind of becomes a mentor to the kids named Charlie. He's the counselor. He's their camp counselor. And there's a point he makes in the book where, and it's a factoid I picked up. I can't recall. It may have been on I'm a big David Attenborough fan. Maybe it was on one of
Oh
his
yeah. Oh. Oh yes.
films. But the point was is that this is not really a planetary emergency so much as it's a human emergency. I mean, at the end of the day, the planet has gone through cooling and warming cycles. We've gone through mass extinctions. I mean, and the planet has a way over millions and billions of years of righting itself. And I think scientists are pretty confident that if we mess the place up, that's probably going to happen. Like the Earth will rebalance. But are humans going to be that lucky? I mean, at the end of the day, I think we can agree. Like it's more of a human emergency at this point, as rather than a planetary emergency. And we need the planet a lot more than the planet needs us. You know what I mean? Like
Mama
planet.
Nature has a reset button, and we're not going to like the reboot.
We don't have a reason, but yeah, but planet Earth does, right? So it's okay. Well, so we could stand around and argue about the cause all day long, but nobody can deny that it's not getting any better. And so can we just push that aside for a minute and start focusing on the solution? Because we don't get a reset button. The Earth does, because the Earth can be patient. The Earth can wait a few billion years and all will be well. I don't think we get that
Well,
lucky.
I think that's why the storytelling can make you swallow that hard pill that we don't want to, and then helps us to move forward in a way like, what can we do? And a book is very personal. When you're reading it, you're on your own usually. You're getting those visualizations, especially with the awesome illustrations you have. But you connect with a character in some way, maybe all of them in certain parts, like, oh, this person's kind of like me, and look what they're doing. Okay, if they can do it, I can do it. So tell us a little bit about an overview of the story without giving everything away, because there's an adventure. But you've got your main character, Jax. Tell us about Jax, and then give us a little overview so that folks and especially parents can hear, yeah, this is what something good for my kids.
So, yeah, so Jax is a troublemaker,
We like troublemakers.
but he's also a Mensa kid, which makes him sort of a double threat.
Ooh.
He's a troublemaking genius, I guess you could say. And he's got this penchant for really trying to wrap his brain around everything to do with climate change so that he can understand why it is that we're doing what we're doing. you know, but being in fifth grade is kind of boring when you're that bright. And, you know, he spends a lot of time thinking about the world's problems, not, you know, his fifth grade math problems. And so he tends to breeze through school with ease. He's, you know, he's a difficult kid to teach and to parent. He just finds himself getting into trouble. You know, he's been labeled. He's an ADHD kid, which I can relate to, as, you know, I was one of those. My mind just went, you know, a million miles an hour as a kid, in some ways as an adult does. And so, you know, he finds himself in hot water. He pulls a prank to get even with someone, I won't give away who, at school. He goes too far. The police get involved. And he's given a choice, basically, an unlikely choice, but they're essentially ready to send him to juvenile detention, because he's kind of a repeat offender at this point. And so just as they're ready to kind of throw away the key with him, a couple of field agents show up from this organization that I created, fictitious, called the Climate Action Task Force. And you know, the whole idea of the Climate Action Task Force is they're created by the UN Governmental Panel on Climate Change. They're sort of this.
Why don't we have this, by the way?
We should have this, right? I mean, come on.
That's kind of like, and they'd have green flashing lights instead of red and blue and white.
It was just this really cool, almost like
that's cool
cyber truck, but like kind of a little bit even more sort of Mad Max sort of in terms of.
Oh, I like this with Benny Hill music.
Right. And, you know, so it's this clandestine organization. They're like secret climate agents. And they say, cool. Hey, watching your kid, we want to recruit your kid into our organization. And his mom's like freaking like, what do you mean? You've been spying on us. And so anyway, cool. The choice is that you've got a pardon from the president of the United States to go join this organization, their academy program, or you can go to juvie. And he's like, well, you know, like which one? So obviously he takes, you know, their offer, and he meets three other kids like him who've been recruited, and they're sort of an unlikely group, very different personality wise, which leads for some interesting sort of relatable dramatic tension that I think most kids will be able to find themselves on one side of or the other. And by the time they land at this academy, there's sort of this little bit of a rivalry between Jax and a female character who is basically, she's a year older than him. She's been named captain of the team, which he doesn't like because he doesn't like to lose and he doesn't like to be upstaged. And turns out that she's also the daughter of a pretty prominent political figure in the U.S. And so there's some nepotism sort of, you know, sort of ridicule.
Drama.
So there's a lot of drama that kind of stirs up between those two over leading the group. And sort of as the book sort of goes on, we do weave in some bits of climate science. There's some teachable bits of what the greenhouse gases are. There's a number of climate tech related sort of products and innovations that are discussed. We do talk about things like sustainable agroforestry. We talk about deforestation, soil erosion. We get into some pretty core sort of climate science concepts. And then we also introduce the rest of the academy at large. So we meet the chancellor who runs the academy, Charlie, the head counselor, the guy I mentioned earlier. And then we also get introduced to this more mysterious character of the guy who founded the whole place. He's a climatologist who actually went missing. And nobody quite knows where he went. Nobody quite knows how he left. But so there's a bit of an aura of mystery around this guy. And it turns out that he's kind of one of Jax's sort of climate heroes, so to speak. And so so we kind of set the stage with that. There's a bunch of teachable moments, as I said. And then as that conflict sort of brews in the background, we sort of frame it all around a class project that has to be presented to the chancellor and some judges, where Jax, to sort of make himself, well, let's just say to assert, you know, his opinions the way he does some things that are sort of a little bit untoward in the way of like sabotage with this contest. The contest is that they're trying to sequester bovine emissions. And so if you're familiar with like those cow fart backpack
oh
theme,
so
they have a they have an assignment where they have
that's
to come,
fun. You've got to put farts in for kids.
You've got to put
farts.
I mean, you know what?
Come
it's
on.
Like, there's, I mean, every second book, and this is part of the reason why I wrote this book, when I tried to find stuff to read to my guys at that, it was all wizard books and fart books. So I'm like, well, I got to put some farts in there because, you know, it just wouldn't
be. And then climate wizards. There you go.
So you got climate and farts. But yeah, I mean, with the cow thing, I think it just, it kind of fit. It made for a pretty fun and highly absurd climactic scene that I won't give away, but it's, I think it's one hopefully that'll have kids in stitches. Takes a page maybe out of a Roald Dahl book. You know, I read a lot of those up. They really struggled to read. Really, that those were the books that got me reading. And so I tried to pay a little homage, maybe with that scene, I would say. But at the end, you know, it all kind of blows up in their faces. You know, Jax's pranks once again catch up with him. All the infighting and stuff like that just, you know, essentially gets them booted from the academy.
But this is you're not supposed to give too much away, but I like this, all these different tensions, because that's what's going on at that age as well, where, you know, kids are starting to get that teenage year and here comes all the drama. But they're also in that thought mode. And, you know, there's a lot of kids now that, you know, take over Twitter on days and like, you know, they're activists. They're climate activists, and they do, you know, go to their the politicians, go knock on their doors, you know, matter what. So I really respect them, and they are out there doing it. So I think that's going to be some of what you get. So there's more than the political side. It's what can we do? I mean, there's kids, that one guy who's a young man who went out and how to clean up the ocean, how to get plastic out of the water. There's young brains that are thinking differently than what we are, you know? So I think there's a lot of communication that can come off of having a book, getting parents and kids to have that conversation, and then even your communities. I think that's cool. That's a communication. It's a lesson in communication for all ages.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Yeah. And I will say this, that, you know, the kid, yeah, so maybe I did bury the lead a little bit there, but you know, the kids they cause trouble. There is trouble, there is repercussions, and then there is recovery. So, you know, I won't give away too much. Maybe I already did, but at the end of the day, you know, it unfolds a little bit more complicated than that. And so I think, you know, towards the end of the book, kids will see that, you know, the challenges go beyond the bickering with the kids. There is actually like a life-threatening situation that emerges, towards the end of the book, where, the kids really have to band together and, you know, come out stronger for it. So.
Very cool. Very cool. So everyone, it is out now. Are you going to do a second one? Well, I know you said you're the series, right? So part two is on its way.
Yeah. So I haven't decided, how many books there'll be yet. I have to sit down and give some thought to the arc. But I think it's fair to say if this book, you know, is positively received, I can foresee at least 5, 7, maybe 10. I don't know. We'll see.
Really have to make that decision all the time, right? Just kind of keep going.
Quite a few more.
Yeah, that's cool. I respect it. I love what you're doing. Everyone, again, The Climate Diaries, book one, The Academy, is out now, April 22nd, 2024. Go get it. It's Earth Day. What a cool thing to do. You can go to erinarsenault.com, and that's A-R-S-E-N, speaking of fire, right? So A-R-S-E-N-A-U-L-T.com. So go there on the website, and you're on Facebook, Instagram, right? Instagram too?
Instagram would be the main channel to reach me.
Well, happy Earth Day and congratulations. Let's eat cake. What cake? What kind of cake do you want? It's Earth Day.
Well, I'm kind of
birthday.
I'm a cheesecake kind of guy. So.
Oh, that's good. You know, now just cows were involved. Cows were involved.
Yes, cows were involved in the making.
Oh,
of this.
Well. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, Erin.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.